Here's the scene. 10 years old, brushing my hair, looking in the mirror, when suddenly the girl looking back at me seemed a stranger. "Who are you?" I asked curiously. No answer. The young girl continued to stare back at me. "Who are you?" I demanded. Well, I knew that girl was me, of course, so I rephrased the question, peered intensely at the mirror girl, and asked with even greater curiosity, "Who is this person in the mirror that is me?" Then a strange thing happened. I was jolted by what I've always thought of as an out-of-body experience. No, my spirit didn't soar to the ceiling and look down on my corporeal me. Actually, I barely moved a couple of inches. But that powerful sensation was a clue to how profound it is to be curious about yourself. I didn't get an answer to my question then because I was really too young to know who I was. The sensation stayed with me, though. It's still really easy for me to recall what that felt like. The experience, however, apparently did not really teach me anything because over the years, I remained distinctly uncurious about myself. I was curious about people and places and nature, so spent a few years traveling and learning about nature, but I didn't really spend any more time thinking who I was in that same deeply curious way. Perhaps I didn't think I was worth a second look. Perhaps I was afraid to look, because I'm sure I'm not the only one who has only recognized in myself the mistakes, the things left undone, and all those heavy things that drag us down. When this month of exploring curiosity came along, I remembered my 10-year-old experience of being curious with a mirror girl. I thought that it might be kind of cool to do an experiment to see if I could repeat that out-of-body thing, because, you know, it was kind of trippy. So, do you want to know what happened? I looked deeply into the mirror and repeatedly asked that snowy-haired woman there, "Who am I?" Nothing. No movement, not even a centimeter. My spirit stayed firmly in my body, which at my age is probably a good thing. To me, it proved that this getting older does have its advantages. Life has tested me to see how I respond to all those ups and downs. With a little forbearance and compassion, I have come to embrace the whole package, both the dispiriting and the uplifting that defines who I am. Asking myself, "Who am I?" now has become an enriching journey. The question no longer overwhelms me. Still, I remain curious and open to learning more about myself in the years ahead, because who knows, maybe sometime when I least expect it, there might be another trippy moment to come.
This morning's reading is a poem entitled, "Everything We Don't Want Them to Know," by Maria Mazziotti Gilan. At 11, my granddaughter looks like my daughter did. That slender body, that thin face, the grace with which she moves. When she visits, she sits with my daughter. They have hot chocolate together and talk. The way my granddaughter moves her hands, the concentration with which she does everything, knocks me back to the time when I sat with my daughter at this table and we talked, and I watched the grace with which she moved her hands, the delicate way she lifted the heavy hair back behind her ear. My daughter is grown now, married in a fairy tale wedding, divorced, something inside her broken, healing slowly. I look at my granddaughter and I want to save her as I was not able to save my daughter. Nothing is that simple. All our plans, carefully made, thrown into a cracked pile by the way love betrays us. Curious about ourselves. Sometimes the crystalline beauty of poetry is just stunning. It feels like it knocks me over with its clarity and its insight. Even if the story in a particular poem is not mine, I recognize a human truth in its lines. Perhaps I notice in the best poems a wisdom and a view into what it means to be human that I have a hard time hearing in other ways and from other sources. The narrator of this poem reflects on generations and emotions and connections, similarities and ties that bind and hold. Perhaps the kicker for me is to go back to the title when you are done reading it. Do you remember what it's called? Everything We Don't Want Them to Know. I sometimes wonder, as Lynn just said, if we are less curious about ourselves than we could be because it is just too hard. It is far easier to assess the lives of others, to advise or judge what seems to be going on in the lives of those around us rather than in our own. Or perhaps it is just simpler to keep busy, to do rather than to be and reflect. What will we find if we look closely at our lives? Will we like what we see? People of a spiritual bent will often refer to famous words evidently uttered by Socrates, at least as reported to us by Plato in his book Apology, where he recounts what occurred at the trial at which Socrates was ultimately sentenced to death for impiety and corrupting youth. That was an interesting bit I hadn't known before this week. You know the quotation from Socrates: "The unexamined life is not worth living." It is compelling, isn't it, that we should not live a life we are unwilling to look at, and look at closely. What Socrates doesn't do, however, is fill in the details. How should we examine our lives? Are there some parts or aspects that we should focus on more than others? And what is the purpose of all of this direct gaze at our own living? Over time, I have begun to recognize that this examination of our lives can take several forms. It is one thing to be interested in growing one's self-awareness. What motivates me? Where are my fears? What do I long for? And it is yet another thing to be alert to the shifts and changes and internal temperature, if you will, in the midst of interactions with other people. It takes spiritual practice, psychological practice, you could say also, to notice what is happening within the moment. You can be in the midst of a conversation with someone, perhaps even in the midst of a conversation with yourself. I'm an expert at those. I don't know about you, but I think when people see me in a car, they must think I'm using Bluetooth and talking on the phone, but I'm really just talking to me. But I can sit there and think, I feel connected. Or perhaps I feel defensive. Why am I so defensive right now? Or perhaps I feel anger and resentment bubbling up. Where is that coming from? Curiosity about ourselves begins with noticing and awareness, and then almost inevitably moves into why. Why am I suddenly feeling attacked? Where did that feeling come from? Is it warranted? And if it's here, what do I do with it? Then we end up feeling and thinking about how might we express this thing that has suddenly emerged. Should we? Or do we, if we are an introvert, need time to process what's going on before we share what it is that we're thinking or feeling? The more examining we do and have done over time, the more easily and more naturally this self-examination comes to us. The more acquainted we become with our own tendencies and stuck places, our biases and our usual go-tos. Curiosity about ourselves often leads to interesting places and to better connections. We are clearer about who we are and who we aren't, about the legacy of our family of origin and our current emotional landscape. Perhaps the best benefit of knowing thine self is less projecting onto others what is really yours to own. Come on, people, right? More holding on to the work that is ours to do. A colleague of mine once told me that one of the best spiritual practices she has ever come across and is now devoted to is rooted in a self-inventory and journaling practice that she refers to as conscious completion. I was intrigued. Sounds pretty good. Completion, closure, and doing it consciously, not unconsciously. So I leaned in and said, "Do tell, say more." She said that at critical moments in her life when something has shifted, could be a move, could be a change in a relationship, could be a loss, could be a job change, she intentionally sets aside time to check in with heart, soul, essential self, whatever you want to call that core place that you know to be you, and goes about conscious completion. She said conscious completion means that she sits down and thinks about four specific things from this moment in her life that she has just gone through. Resentments, regrets, appreciations, and learnings. As she told me about how she has used this, resentments, regrets, appreciations, and learnings at critical moments in life, I thought, what if we did that regularly? You could do that every single day. Where were my resentments? What do I regret? What do I appreciate? And what did I learn? What if we took this conscious completion idea and did it on a smaller scale for everything? It reminded me of a practice I've shared with many of you who have taken spiritual practice classes with me at different times. There's something that our Catholic siblings, the Ignatians to be specific, have that they call the prayer of examine. It's an Ignatian practice where at the end of each day, you set aside 15 or 20 minutes and you ask yourself 5 questions. I have Unitarianized them. The first question is you look at the day and you try to see it through a wider view. You try to say, how does my life look from a broader perspective? For those of you who are theists, you might say, how does my life look if I were to see it through the eyes of spirit, through the eyes of God? For those of you who are not theists, perhaps you would say, how does my life look through the eyes of conscience, of compassion? The second question in the prayer of examine is to say, where are the places of gratitude that I have from this day? For what might I offer my thanks? The third piece is, as I look back over my day, where do I see traces of something larger than myself? A Catholic teacher of mine in seminary would have said, where did God show up today? Do I see an outline in this day of my larger life's trajectory? The fourth piece of the prayer of examine is to face shortcomings. Where was I less gracious or open or compassionate than I could have been today? Or was I just as I would have hoped? Those are my favorite days. Wow. And fifth and finally in the prayer of examine, you look forward to the day to come. And you think about, what will I need to bring to tomorrow? What will be asked of me? What resources might I need to bring to bear on the day to come? If we are to stay curious about ourselves, if we are to remain interested in what motivates us, what moves us, where we are stuck, where we have moved forward, we will have to ask ourselves hard questions. And we might even have to do so regularly. But certainly we will have to set aside time. I don't know about you, but it doesn't just happen, this awareness of self. You have to actually work at it. And if we want to live lives of purpose and intention, or at least lives that don't feel haphazard and accidental, then we will have to make a practice of noticing. We want to live in a way that helps us see clearly who we are and where we are on our life's journey. We want to relate to others in a way that brings our wholeness to bear. And I don't know about you, but I want to do more than just get by. I want to connect with others in a way that is honest and genuine and true to who I know myself to be. And I have a hunch that you want that too. So may we be ourselves, our whole selves, living lives that are examined not under an unforgiving microscope, but through the soulful eyes of meaning and love. May we find there hope and possibility for what is becoming in ourselves and in our world. So may it be, and amen.